Mr. Gormley, Reel 42. Before we go on with the story, Mr. Gormley, 7th Armoured Division had a tremendous reputation in the desert and so forth, and you joined them in England.
Yeah, but I've been with them already in the desert.
Yes, that's right.
I've already been with them in the desert. We went right through my last foot in the desert.
But you rejoined them, as I say, in England prior to D-Day.
Yeah.
What was the spirit of the battalion like? Were they looking forward to more action in Germany or in France?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I joined just prior to that, about 5-6 weeks before. So they got to look to volunteer. I'm going to be headshot.
And you found them,
I in straight away, like, no problem.
But you would have men like yourself in the division that served from the very early days.
The majority of these men had already been in the desert, they'd been through the desert. In fact, a lot of them, when I'd gone back and gone to Burma, they started going all itchy. So they'd already gone through the same kind of terrain in Italy. Is what they were fighting in now in Europe, you have to understand, or very similar as compared to like Burma, you know.
Do you think that the division found the terrain difficult to cope with after being used to open desert and fighting?
Well, no, I wouldn't think so. I honestly wouldn't think so. I didn't find it out. And if I didn't, I'm sure most of the others didn't. There was a camaraderie in the desert that we didn't have in Europe. I must admit that. Because we had so many casualties even in the first few weeks, that within a matter of weeks, we didn't know who was on your boom and who wasn't on your boom kind of style. You were just losing track of everything that was going on. That was one thing. But having said that, like, no, I don't. That was the only reason the camaraderie wasn't as strong as it used to be in the desert.
But you'd lost too many of the old men, veterans.
We'd lost so many of the originals.
Where were your drafts coming from? Where were the extra men coming from? Were they trained artillery or were they being pushed in from other sources?
This regiment that I've already been in, the 6th RHA. Now, they were used more or less as a holding battalion. But there again, there's quite a lot of them in there. And then they had a left wing. They all got themselves in a nice cushy billet there on on these camps. And they were telling me some of the stuff to it, and now I don't believe them in there.
Your brigade commander was a fella called Looney Hind. His nickname was Looney. Did you meet him?
No, not I've seen him, but I never actually had the pleasure of meeting him.
You had quite a reputation, I understand.
I met others, right? I met lots of other people, and I spoke to quite a lot.
Who was commanding your battery in Normandy? Your own immediate superior officer, you know, who was that?
Yeah.
Oh, he was with you at that time in Normandy.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was he like? The lieutenants that were with you with.
We had a Danish fellow there, fellow called Sonson. He was a lovely boy, lovely man. Yeah, I got things to try and not him later on. But he was a really, really nice fellow. Big tall fellow. Yeah. And he was one of the ones who had him out there, famous cross, and got through it.
The men on the gun that you went to Normandy with, do you recall them?
I remember Chris being on there.
And you'd lose a number of these, obviously, through casualties. When a man was hit on the guns, and obviously fell, then how was he took away? Like, did you have medical people close to you?
No, never that close. We always had somebody who was training first aid, like I was. I had to be in St. John's Ambulance for the Army, as a cadet, you know. So I was actually training first aid to quite a good degree, as compared to even the first aid for the cadet. We always had first aid men.
So you basically patched them and until you could get them away?
We just took them or got them back to where the comparatively be safe, and we just made out there so we could better wanted to take them over to the ambulance or whatever, we take them back to wherever the hospital was nearest doing it. Of course, many times I'm a man that got on the street, I've had many lying beside me dying and couldn't do a thing for me.
Your finger. Did you have orders that in situations like that? And you were in action, of course. Did you have orders to ignore them and get on with what you were supposed to be doing?
You did what you could at the time, if it was possible. Otherwise, they just had to lie there until you could get time to.
Must be very difficult to concentrate on your job knowing that someone's badly wounded lying at your feet almost, and you can't help him because you're busy.
You've got to go and look what's happening. There's no way you can even cover them, you know, because you know, but they're not in the world. But I think most people do know that. I've got many people like that. You know what I mean? You just accept them. But I was lucky.
Is this in normally? After this particular action that you were in, you then went to Operation Goodwood in the middle of July. What are your memories of that?
Oh, Goodwood, oh, yes. Yes. Oh, I remember that one. That was horrendous.
You were transferred from the western side of the beachhead over to Kong area, weren't you?
We went over down towards Kong area. And we were going to put the attack in the, across there. And there were three full armoured divisions being used. I think. It was a Guards Armoured Dip, which had a pretty big 70th, and we put it in the floor. It was a Guards Armoured Dip, the
11th?
11th Div and the 7th Armoured Div. Now, looking for us, actually looking for us, and looking for some. We had a cross-free on, we were on, was some men like that. And you remember that. But they had a cross that. When you got across that, it was funny. It's still real, you know. I can't remember where it was. It was still real, you know. It was a different way. And the only way you could get so there was by two tunnels in the embankment. That's the only way you could get so there. No way a tank could go. No way a
bank. Share your bank.
No way a vehicle could go. You just run along the very touch of these end coppers. So the only way through was two very holes. Well, of course, secondly, when you take two roadways underneath the arches. And you had to feed three dividends, had to be fed through that. So these two holes, I'm just calling them holes because it's just like a hole in the wall.
Yeah, it was more or less a cutting through the embankment.
It's a cutting through the embankment. You hardly say holes, it's a hole in the wall. That's where I'm going to go. And I had to go through there. No. When you got through there, we knew the place had been heavily banged over. The whole area had been heavily banged. So, it seems tough to say it now, but the only thing you could do with all these heavy mines in that bit, nobody knew where they were, was drive line ahead, what we call line ahead, like we still should manage to do this. Just put one tank behind the other, and the first one got knocked out right and came around and, you know, until you got the way you were going to do. But, I mean, normally, if you spread out, you've got a chance. But to go line ahead, like, it's asking for better trouble, really asking for trouble. So, anyway, the 11th team set off, and they went through this hole in the ground, and the guards armored went through another one, further down that way. And the guards armored, as far as I know, they were making for a place called Cagney. And very well defended, you know. And the 11th Armoured was going to, what was it called? I can't remember the bloody name of it.
And your role?
Was up over here.
Boogbus, was it? Boogbus, a place called Boogbus.
Boogbus, I couldn't think of the name. Boogbus. And there I had to say Boogbus. And the whole, as I say, the whole place had been mined in that day. And it was, and we were held in reserve. That's what I'm saying, luckily, we were held in reserve. And, to set off to go through these equipment. And they let them get out into the field, on the plane, down the head. And God, they stunk back on the way. You'd never see them going back. Within about 20 minutes, there were about 50, 60 tanks running. Ground was really short.
And were you watching this happening from where your point, your position?
And the guards, it was way down on the left hand side, so we didn't see anything up there. Like. But we were making this exploit, any breakthrough, you know, we were there ready to push through, and if it was a breakthrough, we were going to make a real push for it, like, and go.
And were you called in, and did you get into action?
No, not this particular time. And this, yes, yeah. And I went on, and every bloody shot, must have been that one, that's the whole of the 88s, but it couldn't have been that one either. But they were covered with these 88s, and all these tigers were all doubling in the back. business. You couldn't see them, you know, they were all kind of like that. And the wish for us 120.
And when were you called forward? When did you go in?
We didn't go in at that moment. They were to fight it out. And they were and you got to give them credit, like, because all the tanks of men that had lost to still go on. And they were fighting up in the field. And we were fighting them on the ridge, and it was then and only then that we were called in. That was when we were called in. And the three called in and took them back. Because, you know, we're more or less in the position of being more or less.
What happened to you now? What, in your memory, what were you doing?
Well, I was just watching this happen.
And once you got moving.
Once you got moving, like, you know, you just didn't do it. You just tried to hold it. Because by this time, like, you were able to expand out a bit, like, you know, because a lot of the tanks had gone over on the sides of that. They've blown a lot of the minefields up, the minefields have gone, and of course, probably you had a lot of field tanks that were there at the time. And they were a great assistance, these field tanks. Have you seen them? With a very big field on the foot, and just bam, bam, and then the next door, but he runs in front of him like that. So, we've gone in there, and we just started right on from there, you know. And the guards had been held up at the academy. They hadn't moved. They hadn't moved the uniform yet.
And you came into action with your guns,
yeah,
presumably.
Yeah.
And where was your targets in this particular situation?
Well, as I say, you see anything that moved,
same way.
That the observation that we could see was moving. We were firing.
One of the problems is supposed to be in the congestion of trying to move so many divisions.
We had 3 hour divisions. There was no way you couldn't even spread out because of the mine. Everybody knew that the whole place was being mined.
There must have been tremendous traffic jams, and obviously.
Well, you just travel north to tail, but they got the bloody track until you could get to somewhere where you thought the fact was safe to branch out.
And the enemy were on this ridge and could see what was happening.
They were all along the bloody ridge, and the translation part of that, they lads in the 11th Army. What could they look like?
The scenes on the battlefield as you moved through it must have been pretty horrendous.
Can you imagine trying to, you're driving past all these bloody burning tanks, and there wasn't the one that didn't blow up. Every one of them. And we put it down to that, because it was a fatal flaw. Because they were all petrol driven. And they couldn't do this. And I say, if you've got a spark anywhere near the petrol, the whole bloody thing would just blow up straight away. And yet, as I say, I've seen Shermans with 60, 70 direct hits, and it's still going.
They're a very reliable tank, weren't they?
It was a very reliable tank. It was a good tank.
And yours was a Sherman chassis, I think, that was on yours.
That was the only thing that had been.
The Germans, had they been pounded by the Air Force prior to the action?
God, I forgot to mention that. Fucking my head, oh God. Before this went in, well, it looked like 1,000 bombers. I don't know whether it was about right, but it certainly looked like 1,000 bombers before. And they come over there and they drop the blue lot all along this ridge and everything, you know. And then there was bullets, Anybody in there, they must have been absolutely gutted, you know. And that's how, although these people were down below, they had the anti-tank guns, which were actually anti-aircraft guns, really. They used them as anti-tank guns with great success. And they were down below, and they'd missed all, most of these women. It was the ones on the top of the ridge that they got. And of course, once they got that started, I think it was still in that battle the typhoons came down. Because we were out looking at it, it was like a big cops.
Were you firing at enemy tanks or were they just dug in? They didn't move against you, they just stood.
No, they were just dug in. It was a purely defensive position. We didn't have a deep shot to look, because just a way look looked like that. Big pretty look at him. And I said, of course, I said, bail out, get out of there. And everybody up and out the look. And all of them really can't, but the world at the end, it looks like we had this pretty cops on the far side. But it looked as though,
Did you think that seeing this is going to be easy, as it turned out? It wasn't, we know, when you saw this plastering of the enemy position, did you think, there'll not be much fight left in them?
There'll not be much fight left in these, but there's no light. And then when this came along, and this was the crux at the time, because it was the first time I'd seen the typhoon fighter. And as I said, they come down like that, and skimming down like that. Swarm blind, they were heading for us. I thought they got the wrong bloody car, they didn't get out of here. But anyway, it just went along and they zoomed in there, and they zoomed down, and the bloody lot just went in. They could have walked through there with a bloody match in there. There wasn't a thing left of them.
When you saw what was happening to the 11th Armoured in front of you, you had to move through the battlefield, and seeing all the death and destruction, did you feel that you'd been pushed into something that hadn't been adequately prepared for and planned?
When we go up to the fence line there, and a lot of the blokes went to think that after all this bombing had started, they must have been absolutely deafened by the British Army and conquest. It had to be, it couldn't be any other. To get a load of bombs and that, like, duck right on top of the general like that. I think by the time they got up there, they probably started recovering a bit, because it was funny if you didn't recover from anything like that. And they still came out very fighting, but not the extent of what I think they remember rightly, they more or less took their skates over.
What happened to you next? Did you become involved with the Canadians at all at this time?
Yes, we came back from there, that's right. We came back from there, and we set up to join the Canadian bid. There's two Canadian bids there, yes. And we were set up.
How did you find the Canadians? Did you got in touch? You were in touch with them. But these were in action with you, and you found them all right, did you? So you were in action. What were you doing with them?
Giving them support. As an army did.
You were involved in box barrages. What was a box barrage?
A box barrage, well, I haven't described it yet. We're a bit later,
Oh, well, we can wait till we get to then, because that basically was the next move. You went back over to the Mont Pinçon area. Yeah. What are your memories of that particular action?
Memories of the Canadian invasion. I had a lot of casualties, and we were going all along the car area and all that, and all that, and I had a lot of casualties. But we were with them for quite a number of weeks, And then we handed over to the, the Canadian Army did come up, and they must have had any armor there before, or they must have just landed or something. So the Canadian Army did come in, and
and that's when you moved back over to the west again.
I went back up to the. We retreated from there, that's about a good retreat from there. We just went back from there. And I think we got the 30 bit there. I think we went back to 30 Croft.
And this was Operation Blue Coat, which was Comont area. What happened there?
Well, we decided the next move would be to go down and capture this Mount Pinçon. We went down over this Mount Pinçon. We went down towards it. And it was a heavily wooded area. And I'm just trying to remind you what it looked like.